We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Verses 31 to 58, Description of the Varnashram System. Verse 31. Yasau chandasam lokam araksham ramavistapam gurave vinisejeham swadhyayartam bihadapata. Translation. If the brahmachari student desires to ascend to the Maharloka or Brahmaloka planets, then he should completely surrender his activities to the spiritual master and observing the powerful vow of perpetual celibacy, dedicate himself to superior Vedic studies. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyanan Sarasarakaya Chakshamini Chamyena Tasame Shri Gurave. So what do you remember from the last class on Varnashram? Okay, in the Satya Yuga there was only one class and they only chanted Om. And that was, the whole Vedas were in the one syllable Om. Okay, yes?
All demigods are present in the Guru.
All demigods are present in the Guru, in the spiritual master. That's a very nice thing. Wonderful. Anything else? Yes?
Brahmachari in the bed, cut his hair.
No, don't brush your teeth, cut your hair, or?
iron his clothes.
Iron your clothes. Yeah, so now we have a different application, a different time, yes.
Shouldn't see the spiritual master as an ordinary person.
Shouldn't see the spiritual master as an ordinary person. Okay? What else? Yes?
The sutta has the qualities to be honest and to be satisfied with whatever income he receives.
Yes, honest, Shudra should be honest and satisfied with whatever income he has received. Yes.
And
all social order should be free from lust and anger, honesty and truthfulness and thinking of the welfare of everyone. Yes.
Useless or baseless quarrels, shushka vigraha, is a sign of those who are outside of
Okay, useless quarrel is a sign of those who are outside of Varnashram Dharma. Okay, yes.
Only in the first Satya Yuga in one day of Brahma are people Brahma.
Only in the first Satya Yuga one day of Brahma are the people, the beginning of the day of Brahma are people all Hamsas. Yes. Guru is the supreme servitor, supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It should be respected. Yes?
One worships Govinda but not his devotees, he's a hypocrite.
One who worships Govinda and not his devotees is a hypocrite. Okay. So now we are going to hear more about the brahmachari before we get to the grihastha. Verse 31 says, if the brahmachari wants to go to Maharloka or Brahmaloka, then he has to follow perpetual celibacy. One who desires the supreme perfection of life must engage his body, mind, and words in the service of a bona fide spiritual master. When desiring elevation to superior planets, such as Brahmaloka and Maharloka, must fully engage in the spiritual master's service. We can thus imagine the sincerity of purpose and service required to achieve the Krishna Loka planet, which lies far beyond the material universe. So just for going to Brahma Loka, you have to be a very dedicated brahmachari, Maharloka. 32, thus enlightened in Vedic knowledge by service to the spiritual master, free from all sins and duality, once you worship me as the Supersoul, as I appear within fire, the spiritual master, one's own self, and all living entities. Well, if you chant your Gayatri, that helps also. End of the purport. A purified human being is a pratagti, or without consciousness of duality, because he has been trained to observe the Supreme Personality of Godhead within all things. Such sublime consciousness should be systematically taught throughout the world so that human society will become peaceful and sublime. Okay, verse 33. Those who are not married, sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis, should never associate with women by glancing, touching, conversing, joking, or sporting. Neither should they ever associate with any living entity engaged in sexual activities. End of the purport. When a man jokes with a woman, an intimate, sexually charged atmosphere is immediately created, and this should also be avoided for those aspiring to practice celibacy. Even a householder who becomes attached to such activities will also fall down into the darkness of ignorance. So that's a pretty heavy statement for grihasthas, which I doubt. Anyway, yes. For the brahmacharis, it should be taken very seriously. But for the grihasthas, they can sometimes joke. But Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya only one time joked with his wife. I can't remember what that was. What that joke was.
He said to his mother.
It said to his mother.
Daughter-in-law took it.
Something was missing. And he said, maybe your daughter-in-law took it.
It wasn't a direct joke.
It wasn't even a direct joke. Mm-hmm. So, well, she probably was present.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting how these principles were in the previous ages. Like today, somebody, you tell that to some grihastha and they will say, what? No, not possible. Because even in Krishna book, it says Krishna, you know, grihasthas like to joke with their wives. The husband likes to joke with his wife. And Krishna was joking with Rukmini, but she took it seriously, actually. Okay, 34, 35. My dear Uddhava, general cleanliness, washing the hands, bathing, performing religious services at sunrise, noon, and sunset, worshipping me, visiting holy places, chanting japa, avoiding that which is untouchable, uneatable, or not to be discussed, and remembering my existence within all living entities as the super soul. These principles should be followed by all members of society through regulation of the mind, words, and body. So everyone is supposed to follow this, japa. Visit holy places, avoid untouchable, uneatable, undiscussable things. Remembering Krishna, this is for everyone. So it's a pretty high level of life, the Varnashram system. You have to remember Krishna, see him as super soul, chant japa. So this is the actual Varnashram according to Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Krishna in Uddhava Gita. 36, the Brahmana, observing the great vow of celibacy, becomes brilliant like fire, and by serious austerity burns to ashes the propensity to perform material activities. Free from the contamination of material desire, he becomes my devotee. Purport. Process of liberation is described in this verse. Once, when Srila Prabhupada was traveling by airplane, a fellow passenger who happened to be a priest told him he had seen his disciples and found them bright-faced. Srila Prabhupada was fond of relating this incident. The spirit soul is more brilliant than the sun, and as the process of spiritual purification gradually takes effect, even the external form of a devotee becomes effulgent. The glowing fire of spiritual knowledge burns to ashes the mentality of sense gratification, and one naturally becomes austere and disinterested in mundane enjoyment. So many times non-devotees would see Prabhupada as being very effulgent. Like one time Prabhupada was in an airport and one person who was mopping the floor was shouting, he's shining, he's shining, he's shining. You know, and they noticed that Prabhupada was very effulgent. Maybe because he's pure devotee. Among all austerities, the best is celibacy. I read the last one, yeah. By which the shackles of material life immediately become slackened. One who is amala, free from material desire, is known as a pure devotee of the Lord. On the path of jnana, karma, and yoga, the mind retains the concept of personal interest. But in the path of pure devotion, the mind is trained to see only the interests of the personality of Godhead. Thus a pure devotee of the Lord is Amala, completely pure. So what verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita is being paraphrased here? So, Shakali Ashanta. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ata Eva Shanta. He has Nishkam, he has no desire, therefore he's peaceful. So again, I'll read from Brahmacharya in Krishna Consciousness, and he's talking about how wonderful it is to remain celibate, Naishtik Brahmacharya. The glories of being a Naishtik Brahmacharya. He says, opting to remain celibate is a great decision. It is called Brihad Vrata, the great vow of perpetual celibacy, for it is not at all easy to follow. Mahajan Bhishmadev was awarded his name, meaning terrible, by the demigods upon his adopting this vow. For it is indeed a very difficult task to undertake, but for those who adhere firmly to this vow, it practically guarantees liberation. Brahmacharya is a lonely path followed by only a few and rarely understood or appreciated. Those who decide to remain lifelong celibates may have to face doubts expressed by those who believe such a determination to be impossible to keep. And, considering that several apparently stalwart devotees have fallen into the clutches of women, it may seem impractical for others to try to maintain such rigid vows. However, the failure of setback of some does not portend failure for all. Although some renunciates have fallen throughout history, yet others have resisted and gone on to achieve perfection. Our acharyas have never stopped encouraging devotees to aspire for the highest ideal, despite the inevitability that some will slip along the way. That most brahmacharis eventually marry certainly does not mean those determined to remain celibate cannot succeed. So there is a note of encouragement for those who want to remain Naishtik Brahmacharis. Verse 37, now we hear about the other kind, Upakarvana. A Brahmachari who has completed his Vedic education and desires to enter household life should offer proper remuneration to the spiritual master, bathe, cut his hair, put on proper clothes, and so on. Then, taking permission from the guru, he should go back to his home. Purport. This verse describes a process called samavartana, or returning to one's home after finishing Vedic education in the ashram of the spiritual master. One who takes to family life must rigidly follow the Vedic rules and regulation in order to avoid the collapse of his spiritual determination. When the mind is disturbed by lust, one begins to resent the principle of submission to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotee. Why should I surrender? I should be independent. And the dark clouds of one's offensive mentality completely cover the light of spiritual knowledge. One should dovetail his propensity to love someone by serving the lotus feet of a pure devotee. As stated in Vedic literature, one who worships Govinda, Lord Krishna, but does not worship his devotees is not to be considered an advanced Vaishnava. Rather, he is to be considered a proud hypocrite. Oh, you already told us that. Quote, the beginning of class, but there was another one similar. Okay, so I'd like to read from Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life by Bhakti Vikas Swami. And there is, this is from Brajahari, who is the temple president of Bombay, I believe. He's still temple president. And he's remembering his life in the village. Bhakti Vikas Swami was telling about the ceremonies, the sangskaras that they used to perform. And it was saying when the child is 10 months old, anaprashan, first grains. And there were, even before that, when they were pregnant, there were other ceremonies. And that was 10 months old. Before that, they're given only milk, mother's milk and cow's milk. And nowadays, buffalo milk. Especially mother's milk is very important to help the child grow up stout and healthy. Women would generally breastfeed their children up to the age of 5 years. So this was the village life. And, of course, we have the 6 months old where they get their first grains, but my child was so much drinking, I had to give it to him when he was 4 months old, because he was, every hour on the hour, he was drinking milk, so I had to give him grains really early, because he was very big and... But I did breastfeed up till 3.5 years. So then they give the name-giving ceremony. They give at the same time as the anapreshan, which was after 10 months. I don't know what they call the baby, but he doesn't have a name until he's 10 months old. It's interesting. And then they would give him a vocational inclination test. And here's, like, we only put, like, coins and, the Bhagavatam. But they would put gold, a knife, a copy of Bhagavad Gita, and a box with kumkum. So the gold means they're a Vaishya, a knife means they're a Kshatriya. And the Gita means they're a Brahmin. And the kumkum means that it's a very nice thing. If they take the kumkum, there will be no major difficulties or calamities in his life. So that's quite nice. And they have the hair cutting ceremony, Chudakaran. And they would all go to Puri to shave. And it was 150 kilometers from the village. They would just walk to Puri. They would just pick up rice on the way. Wood was everywhere. And vegetables those days were never sold. People grew them locally, and if any travelers on the way took a few vegetables, they were welcome. Mm-hmm. This was when Brajahari was a child, and he's like, 50-something now. He lived in a village in Orissa. Okay, then they had the birth ceremony, and then, Upanayanam. So this is what we're hearing about now, when he goes home after study. So the sacred thread ceremony was very important in a Brahmin family. The usual age is about 10 or 12. The boy's head would be shaved to make him look like a nice brahmachari, and it's supposed to mark the boy's going to Gurukul for beginning Vedic studies, but nowadays it's simply a formality and a social occasion. A family priest does a fire sacrifice and everybody wears a dhoti and chador. The family spends a lot of money for the Upanayanam ceremony, and after the fire sacrifice, they give a huge feast to all the villagers and their relatives. If there's a feast in the village, they have to invite everybody. After the ceremony, now here's the thing. The priest and villagers take the boy to the end of the village where there are no more houses, and they chant a mantra, and they put three lines in the sand. Then they ask the boy, "Do you want to remain a brahmachari, or do you want to take the renounced order?" Actually, it's just a formality. So the elderly people teach the boy not to say he wants to accept the renounced order. If the boy chooses the renounced order, then he has to cross those three lines and he will never come back home. Hardly anyone ever does that, but we know of some very rare cases who left to become sadhus. Near our village, a boy just left. He never came back. So then Bhaktivikas Maharaj says, all the village people must have been very sorry. Had he planned that? Brajahari said he was 14 years old. At that time, he always went when there was a kirtan festival in a nearby village. He was very fond of chanting Hare Krishna. He just took off from the Upanayanam ceremony. He took the thread, the mantra, everything. When you cross the line, your father and mother cannot bring you back. They cannot call you to come back over those three lines. To do that, take sannyas, and then return to home life is extremely sinful. So that was in the village in Orissa. When Brajahari... He said even recently somebody took off, just left and crossed the three lines, and that was it. He didn't go back home. And so this was the Vedic culture in not so long ago. And, you know, of course, now it's a formality, and they say, no, you don't go past those three lines. You say, you want to be brahmachari and go to the Gurukul, not to take sannyas. So, but this is how it used to be. Amazing in the villages. So verse 38, a brahmachari desiring to fulfill his... Now we're hearing about grihastha life. Brahmachari desiring to fulfill his material desire should live at home with his family, and a householder who is eager to purify his consciousness should enter the forest. Whereas a purified brahmana should accept the renounced order of life. So this is for a brahmana. He can leave... He can become grihastha, he can be vanaprast, or he can be sannyas. One who is not surrendered to me should move progressively from one ashram to another, never acting otherwise. So don't act above your level, or else you might go backwards. So purport, last paragraph of this big purport. Lord Krishna emphasizes here, A non-devotee must rigidly observe the rituals and regulations of Vedic social divisions, whereas the Lord's pure devotee engaged 24 hours a day in Lord Krishna's mission is transcendental to such divisions. If, however, one performs illicit activities on the strength of being transcendental to Vedic social divisions, one is revealed to be a materialistic neophyte, not an advanced devotee of the Lord. An advanced devotee who remains aloof from material sense gratification is not bound by the Vedic social divisions. Thus, even a householder may live very austerely, traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness away from home. And even a sannyasi may sometimes engage women in devotional service of Lord Krishna. So Prabhupada, he had the grihasthas out preaching. That was the process. You go, you join the temple, you learn how to do everything, you learn how to cook, sell books, and have programs, and then you go out and start a temple. And we did that also, my husband and I. After, I think we were devotees for 9 months or 1 year, then we went out and started our own temple. That was it. And we just had to go out. They didn't give you any money. You just had to find a place. And you just go out, do Harinam, sell books, and make it, and have a feast on Sunday, and you make a temple. And Prabhupada, he sent three grihasthas to London to preach, and they were more successful than the sannyasis from the Gaudiya Math who had been there previously. There was a headline in the newspaper that Krishna chant startles London. And so Prabhupada said in one lecture, he mentioned that my spiritual master, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he was sending brahmacharis and sannyasis to preach, but I am sending grihasthas to preach. So Prabhupada, he had this yukta vairagya, and that, yes, even if the grihasthas, grihe tako, bane tako, if you live in the forest or you live at home, you should simply chant the holy name. Hari Boli Bolo Dako. So then, here it says, and yes, the most advanced devotees cannot be restricted by the rituals and regulations of the Varnashram system, and they move freely around the world distributing love of Godhead. It's too bad Prashant is not here. She would like to hear this part. Matpara indicates a pure devotee of the Lord who always keeps the Lord fixed in his heart and consciousness. One who falls down to become a victim of sense gratification is not fully established on the platform of Matpara and should rigidly observe the social divisions and regulations to remain steady on the platform of pious human life. So Varnashram is very important for those who cannot surrender and give their life to Krishna. Verse 39, one who desires to establish family life should marry a wife of his own caste who is beyond reproach and younger in age. If one desires to accept many wives, he must marry them after the first marriage, and each wife should be of a successively lower caste. So here's polygamy in Varnashram. Stated in the very Vedic literature, Tisho Varna Nipurvyena Devetataika Yatakramam Brahmanakshatriya Visham Paryasva Shijijamana. Purport of this verse is one's first wife must always be Sadvishim, or similar to oneself. In other words, an intellectual man should marry an intellectual wife, heroic man should marry a heroic wife, business-minded man should marry a woman who can encourage him in such activities, and a Shudra should marry a less intelligent woman. The wife must be beyond reproach in terms of her background and character and should always be younger than oneself, ideally 5 to 10 years younger. If one desires to marry a second wife, then, as stated in this verse by the word Varnanu Purvyena, and in the verse spoken by Lord Krishna by the word Anukramat, one must wait until the first marriage is established and then select a second wife from the next lower caste. If one marries a third time, the wife must be again from the next lower caste. These Vedic marriage injunctions, as mentioned in the previous verse, are especially for those who are not pure devotees of the Lord. So there was some time in the past in our ISKCON history that there was it was being spread around that all the women are Shudras. They all belong to only one caste. So then I said, well, then there's no anulom and pratiloma. Then there's no consideration. If everyone is one, it's all one, then what about, you know, if a Brahmana lady marries a Shudra, and these things. And then they cited, oh, actually, yes, okay, there are different. I went to a Varnashram meeting, and the people in my group, somebody said that. I said, well, what about this, anulom and pratiloma?
What is it, anulom and pratiloma?
Anulom means if you marry somebody who is, if a Kshatriya marries somebody who is lower than him. And Pratiloma means like if a person marries somebody who is in a higher caste, a woman who is in a higher caste. If a man marries somebody in, like a Kshatriya marries a Brahmin, a woman, then that's Pratiloma. But if it's the other way around, it's Anuloma. Just like Yayati and Devayani. She was a Brahmana and he was a Kshatriya, and he said, no, I cannot. But she forced him to marry her. So verse 40, all twice-born men, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. So Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they all have these duties to do. Only the Brahmanas, however, accept charity, teach the Vedic knowledge, and perform sacrifice on behalf of others. Okay, so what are the three duties for the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas? Yes?
Worship,
study and give charity. But only the Brahmanas can do the opposite. Teach, accept, and perform sacrifice. Purport, all civilized men must participate in sacrificial performances, give charity, and study the Vedic literature. The best of the twice-born, namely Brahmanas, are specifically empowered to lead sacrificial performances on behalf of all members of society, teach everyone Vedic knowledge, and receive everyone's charity. So, in case the people are wondering who we should give charity to, it's the Brahmanas. And so they do all three. They teach, they do sacrifice, and they accept charity. But they also give charity, too. They also give it. Not that they just accept charity and accept and accept. And no, they also give. There's a saying that if a Brahmana gets a lack of rupees, then the next day he becomes has no money because he spends it immediately. Okay. Without the assistance or participation... Yeah, we did that. Well, okay, without the assistance or participation of qualified Brahmanas, the lower classes cannot properly study the Vedic literature, perform sacrifice, or give in charity because they do not have the required intelligence to perfectly execute such functions. When Kshatriyas and Vaishyas take shelter of bona fide Brahmins, they're able to properly execute their respective duties and society functions smoothly and efficiently. 41. A Brahmana who considers that accepting charity from others will destroy his austerity, spiritual influence, and fame should maintain himself by the other two brahminical occupations, namely teaching Vedic knowledge and performing sacrifice. The Brahmana considers that those two occupations also compromise his spiritual position, then he should collect rejected grains in agricultural fields and live without any dependence on others. In the purport, they quote a Bhagavad Gita verse, a pure devotee of the Lord should always remember the Supreme Personality of God will personally take care of him. Ananyaschintayanto mam ye janakayapasate deshanityabhyuttanam yogakshemam vahamiham. Those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. A Brahmana should not become a professional beggar for his personal maintenance. In India, there are many so-called Brahmanas who sit at the gates of important temples and beg from everyone who comes and goes. If someone does not give a donation, they become angry and chase that person. Have any of you had experience of that? Nandagram, okay. Used to be Varshana also. Varshana. I really think some of them were our book distributors in their last life. Some of those kids. There's in Puri also. Alanath, okay. Yeah, it's, yes. Our book distributors can learn from them. Similarly, in America, there are many big preachers who collect huge amounts of money by begging on television and radio. Yeah, they go on the TV and they said, now anybody has any disease, put your hand on that part and we will pray. We will pray to God. And they said, or else, different thing. You want money? Then we will pray for you, or, you know, different things like that. Oh, so... And they make millions. If a Brahmin or Vaishnava considers that being a professional beggar is weakening his austerity, destroying his spiritual influence, and giving him a bad reputation, then he should give up that process. One may beg everyone to contribute to the cause of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one will be diminished in austerity, influence, and reputation by begging for one's personal livelihood. A Brahmana may then take up the task of teaching Vedic knowledge and performing sacrifice. But even such occupations do not bring one to the highest platform of trust in God. A Brahmana who teaches as a means of livelihood may often be curbed in his teaching, and one who performs sacrifice may be manipulated by materialistic worshippers. In this way, a Brahmana may be placed in an embarrassing and compromised position. Therefore, a high-class Brahmana or Vaishnava ultimately will depend completely on the mercy of the Lord for his maintenance. The Lord promises to maintain his devotee, and an advanced Vaishnava never doubts the word of the Lord. So those who travel and preach, I'm sure you must have experienced that all your needs are taken care of and you don't have to worry. Right, Layashuka?
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's amazing, right? When you depend on the Lord, it's quite amazing.
Like this I got in South Spain, Malaga.
And the sweater.
I got in Sweden.
Wow.
So, because I needed that copy now, and somewhere or another.
Right. And where did the jacket come from?
That's the donation from someone in Glasgow.
Okay. Yeah, so here we have a living example of somebody who is depending on the mercy of the Lord. And, yes. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments on this verse 41. Brahmanas who are reluctant to accept charity, thinking that such an act weakens his austerity, destroys his spiritual influence, and gives him a bad reputation, should simply depend upon the Lord's mercy and not make a great endeavor to earn wealth. Yes, if you accept money, then you're indebted to that person. So if you don't pay them back, like spiritually, then you have to come back your next life. So like if you don't pray for them, or if you don't, you know, do something for them, then you might be indebted at least. A Brahmana should simply depend upon the mercy of the Lord and not endeavor unnecessarily for his family maintenance. The Lord has promised he will maintain his devotee. And one who is sincere does not doubt the words of the Lord. 42. The body of a Brahmin is not intended to enjoy an insignificant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahmana will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. Okay, so here, Prabhupada, one may ask why a Brahmana should voluntarily accept inconvenience in keeping his body and soul together. In this verse, the Lord explains, an advanced human life is meant for serious austerity and not for insignificant sense gratification. By spiritual advancement, one is fixed in transcendental bliss on the spiritual platform and gives up useless absorption in the temporary material body. So then we go a little lower. The Brahmana is, by accepting a troublesome form of livelihood, never forget that the material body is destined to grow old, become diseased, and die in misery. Thus remaining alert and transcendental, an advanced Brahmana at the end of his life goes back home, back to Godhead, where he enjoys unlimited spiritual bliss. Okay, then next paragraph. Those devotees engaged 24 hours a day in spreading the mission of Lord Krishna are beyond the platform of renunciation or sense gratification, because they engage everything in Lord Krishna's service. A pure devotee eats only to get strength for serving the Lord and does not accept either sumptuous or meager food simply for the body's sake. However, everything may be accepted for the Lord, even sumptuous meals. But he should feel embarrassed to eat sumptuously. But he may, because you have to eat at people's houses. Similarly, he sometimes eats sumptuously to get strength for defeating atheists and impersonalists. It helps a lot if you have a feast before you defeat the impersonalists and atheists. Okay. So verse, now this one actually was the one I meant to read. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. A Brahmana who has realized the transcendental personality of Godhead enjoys boundless spiritual happiness and does not take pleasure in gratification of the senses. Such a devotee does not undergo severe austerity simply for the purpose of deceiving himself. Those who consider that surrendering to the Supreme Lord involves great severe austerity think in that way because they are addicted to selfish acts of sense enjoyment. Being self-interested, they ultimately engage in severe austerities for the purpose of attaining liberation. Devotees of the Lord, however, on the strength of their engagement in devotional service, reject the pleasures of the senses as being insignificant. That is Nittai's mercy. It is not the duty of a brahmana to become either a sense enjoyer or a dry ascetic. His training is simply meant for him to understand he's eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. So then he quotes three verses about, he says, if a brahmana carefully contemplates the meaning of the following three verses, he can surely come to the conclusion that human life is meant for engaging oneself in devotional service of the Lord and not for pursuing insignificant sense gratification. So two verses from Mukunda Mala Stotra. O Lord Hari, it is not to be saved from the dualities of material existence or the grim tribulations of the Kumbhibaka hell that I pray to your lotus feet, nor is my purpose to enjoy the soft-skinned beautiful women who reside in the gardens of heaven. I pray to your lotus feet only so I may remember you alone in the core of my heart, birth after birth. I have no attraction for performing religious rituals or holding any earthly kingdom. I do not care for sense enjoyments. Let them appear and disappear in accordance with my previous deeds. My only desire is to be fixed in devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord, even though I may continue to take birth life after life. So then there's another one. Shikshastika. Natanam natanam nasundarim kaviram vachagadish kamare majanmani janmani shere vartara bhaktirahi chikitve. So verse 43. A brahmana householder should remain satisfied in mind by gleaning rejected grains from agricultural fields and marketplaces. So for this you have to live in the village, obviously, not in the city. Keeping himself free of personal desire, he should practice magnanimous religious principles with consciousness absorbed in me. In this way, a brahmana may stay at home as a householder without very much attachment and thus achieve liberation. So what does this mean here? It explains magnanimous religious principles like very hospitably receiving guests, even those who are uninvited and unexpected. Okay, so this is about grihasthas. Were brahmanas. How did Bhaktivinoda Thakur live as a Krishna conscious life? He had so many children, he was working as a judge. He expressed his mentality in one of his songs, in Sharanagati, number 5. So I'll just sing that song and you can get an idea of his mentality as a grihastha. Amara bolite prabhu ara kichenai. To me, amara matta pita bandhu bhai, O Lord, nothing further remains that may be called mine. Father, friend, brother, you alone are all these to me. Mandudara sutta stata vadasidas, seta sambante shabe amara prayash. My friends, wife, sons, and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take for them is only as they are related to you. Dhanajana grihadar to marbolia, raka koriami matro sheva koya. Declaring that my wealth, family members, home, and wife are truly yours, I continue as a mere servant to dutifully protect them. Tomar kardia tore upar jibotan, tomar shamshare vyaya koribo bahan. For the purpose of your service, I will earn money and bear the expense of maintaining your household. Bhalo manno nahi jani seva matra kori tomar sangsari ami bishai pahari. I know nothing of what is good or bad. I simply render my service. I am but a watchman set to guard the properties of your household. Tomari chai mor india chalana shavan darshan krana bhojan bhashana. I exercise my senses only according to your direction, and thus I desire to hear, see, smell, and taste. Nija sukalaki kichinahi kori ar bhakati vinoda bole tava shukat shar. I no longer do anything for my own pleasure. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, your pleasure is the essence of everything. So then, Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati also comments, Srinartam Das Thakur has said, one should engage in the service of the Supreme Lord, whether one is living at home or residing in the forest. The essence of all instructions of Shastra is it is the duty of all the members of eight varnas and ashrams to serve the Supreme Lord while remaining indifferent to material enjoyment. If one utilizes everything in the service of Lord Krishna, then regardless of his position within the varnashram social system, he must be considered a liberated soul. So isn't that nice? If you're in varnashram, if you're just completely dedicated to the service of the Lord, then you are a liberated soul. Okay. So then he has two more verses for us to think about. And one is from Bhaktivinoda Sindhu. Arichaya mat katado jata sharas tu yakumana nirvino nati sato bhakti yogos yasidhira. Somehow or other, if one is attracted to talks about me and has faith in the instructions I have set forth in Bhagavad Gita, and if one is actually detached from material things and material existence, his dormant love for me will be awakened by devotional service. Now one more. Aradito yadi haristapasa tatakim. Naradito yadi haristapasa tatakim. Antarbahir yadi haristapasa tatakim. Nantarbahir yadi haristapasa tatakim. If one is worshipping Lord Hari, what is the use of performing extraneous penances? And if one is not worshipping Lord Hari, no such penances will save one. If one can understand Lord Hari is all-pervading within and without, what is the need of performing penances? And if one is not able to understand Hari is all-pervading, all his penances are useless. So these are recommended verses by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati. Now verse 44 is a very wonderful verse. Just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift brahmanas and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. So here's a nice verse to give to people. If you want to make a life member. Purport. The Lord has described how brahmanas and devotees achieve perfection of life, and now a similar perfection is offered to those who use their materialistic wealth to relieve the poverty-stricken condition of devotees and brahmins. Although one may neglect the devotional service of the Lord to pursue a material life of sense gratification, one can rectify one's position by dedicating one's hard-earned money to the service of the Lord. Seeing the difficult austerities accepted by saintly persons, a pious person should make arrangements for their comfort. Just as a boat saves hopeless people who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, the Lord uplifts persons who have hopelessly fallen into the ocean of material attachment if they have been charitable to the brahmanas and devotees. 45. Just as the chief bull elephant protects all other elephants in his herd. Now we're hearing about kshatriyas. And defends himself as well. Similarly, a fearless king, just like a father, must save all the citizens from difficulty and also protect himself. Purport. Lord Krishna, having concluded his discussion of brahminical duties, now describes character and activities of a king. So, protecting all the citizens. What examples do we have in our Bhagavatam reading of kings like this? Who? Prithu Maharaj, okay. Parikshit, Yudhisthira, Shibi, and Rantidev, I thought about, because they were with all living entities. Just a pigeon, was it a pigeon, came to Shibi and wanted protection from a hawk? Bharat also? Yes, these are examples. Kings who protected the citizens. 46, an earthly king who protects himself and all citizens by removing all sins from his kingdom will certainly enjoy with Lord Indra in airplanes as brilliant as the sun. So these are for kings who want to enjoy and at the same time do their duties. You will go to heaven and enjoy. But Maharaj Pariksit, he was a devotee king, and what he did when Kali entered his kingdom is he had Harinam to protect the citizens. That's an appropriate by Srila Prabhupada in first canto, 18th chapter, I believe, that he was having Harinam, and that's how he protected his citizens from Kali. Verse 47, if now we'll hear about duties in an emergency. If a Brahmana cannot support himself through his regular duties and is thus suffering, he may adopt the occupation of a merchant and overcome his destitute condition by buying and selling material things. If he continues to suffer extreme poverty even as a merchant, then he may adopt the occupation of a kshatriya, taking sword in hand. But he cannot in any circumstances become like a dog accepting an ordinary master. Purport, shva vritya, a dog's profession, refers to shudras who cannot live without accepting a master. The destitute brahmana who is suffering intolerably may become a merchant and then a kshatriya, but may never take the position of a shudra by working in a company or accepting a master. Although a kshatriya is ordinarily considered more elevated than a vaishya, the Lord here recommends distressed brahmanas first accept the vaishya occupation since it is not violent. And Vishwanath Chakravarti adds, he may engage in selling, but not selling liquor or salt. I don't know what's wrong with salt. You know anything about salt that makes it... Okay. Or other forbidden items, huh?
Maybe because it's from the sea.
From the sea. I don't know. Okay. It is said that Gotam took up a sinful occupation when in danger. Gotam Rishi. And then there's a verse 7:11-18-20 which explains the same and is a little bit more elaborate. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various types of profession known as Rita, Amrita, Mrita, Pramrita, and Satyanrita. But one should not at any time accept profession of a dog. So Uncha Shila, collecting grains from the field, is called Rita. Collecting without begging is called Amrita. How can you collect without begging?
Ayachita means you accept only what's coming.
Okay. Oh, so that's like Madhvantapuri or... Oh, okay. So that's interesting. So that's... Amrita. That must be the best because it's Amrita. Amrita. It just whatever comes, you accept.
They all have a meaning. Because when you Amrita means like killing.
Killing, yeah. Begging grains is called Mrita.
Because you're annoying people.
Mrita, you're killing people if you beg grains.
And Satyanrita, selling and buying, it's
trade.
Trade. So it's truth and lies.
Truth and lies, Satyanrita. And what about Pramrita, tilling the ground, agriculture?
Agriculture is a lot of killing.
A lot of killing, yeah.
Because
you're killing all the
insects,
plant, animals, and even the plants, some of them.
So many worms.
Yeah. Satyanrita. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, however, is called Shvavriti, profession of the dogs. So you should not do that. And Prabhupada talks about this in many classes, about the four classes. He said, the shudra must find a nice master, otherwise it is a street dog. So in America we're finding that there's a lot of people who don't have work and they just don't know what to do with themselves. Shudra must have a nice paying master, otherwise his life is at risk. And yet our relatives, they can't figure out how we live without a job. Our whole life, we've been living without a job. I was trying to get, a grant for my son to study in the government, and they couldn't believe I had no money. There's, no Social Security, no this, no that. Yeah, and so anyway, couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe it. Yeah, I had to sign something, okay? So here we go. Nectar of Devotion lecture in Calcutta. Street dog is very wretched. You see this in India. In the West, you don't see any street dogs because they pick them all up and take them to the pound. They call it a pound. A dog under the care of a good master is very healthy and very happy. Similarly, a shudra cannot live without a master. So he says a brahmana will starve, but he'll never accept any service. That is against brahmana principles. And he says, why do you don't want to become servant? Because as soon as you become servant, your independence is lost. So He says, but we, Prabhupada said, we can only keep our independence when we become servant of God, because there is no injustice. So we can become servant, that's okay, but it's servant of Krishna. 48, a king, so that's for the brahmanas, he can become Vaishya and Kshatriya. A king or other member of the royal order who cannot maintain himself by his normal occupation may act as a Vaishya, may live by hunting, or may act as a brahmana by teaching others Vedic knowledge, but he may not under any circumstances adopt the profession of a Shudra. So king can also be a Vaishya or brahmana, or a hunter, because they have to hunt. The Kshatriyas know how to hunt. So he can live that way too. 49. A Vaishya or mercantile man who cannot maintain himself may adopt the occupation of a Shudra. And a Shudra who cannot find a master can engage in simple activities like making baskets and mats of straw. So I was reading this book by Bhakti Vikas Swami. It says in the village they don't have anything made from the factory. That they just use the bamboo. You know, stronger bamboos is for like making a bridge or a house, and the weaker bamboo is for like making mats and things. They weave things. So yeah, they had no need of factory things. They just were very self-sufficient in the village. However, all members of society who have adopted inferior occupations in emergency situations must give up those substitute occupations when the difficulties have passed. Like you don't get attached to being doing something else. So now, verse 50, the Grihastha Ashram, duties of the Grihastha. One in the Grihastha order of life should daily worship the sages by Vedic study, forefathers by offering the mantra Swadha, demigods by chanting Swaha, all living entities by offering shares of one's meals, and human beings by offering grains and water. Thus considering the demigods, sages, forefathers, living entities, and human beings to be manifestations of my potency, one should daily perform these five sacrifices. So, when I was in Nepal, I saw people would be offering flour, wheat flour, or sugar for the ants. They would go out on the street, and they will put where the ants are. They will find some ants, and they will put down some sugar and some wheat flour. They're even thinking of the ants. So amazing. So the purport, it says, of course, this is for those who are not pure devotees, because they have to counteract their exploitation. If you're full-time devotees, no further obligations, and he quotes that verse. Divaishibhutapta ninam pitinam nakin karonayam rini charajam Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Kato Mukundam Parityakartam. Anyone who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigod sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. So verse 51, a householder should comfortably maintain his dependence either with money that comes of its own accord or with that gathered by honest execution of one's duties. According to one's means, one should perform sacrifice and other religious ceremonies. 52, a householder taking care of many dependent family members should not become materially attached to them, nor should he become mentally unbalanced, considering himself to be the Lord. An intelligent householder should see that all possible future happiness, just like that which he has already experienced, is temporary. So putting Grihastha life in perspective, Srimad Bhagavatam has a tendency to do that. Don't become mentally unbalanced, thinking you are the controller of your family, because you're not the controller of your family, especially in Kali Yuga. And so you have to remember that everything's temporary. Verse 52. So Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati on 52. Yes. Oh, he's pretty heavy. Get ready. An intelligent person should not invite aversion to the Supreme Lord under the pretext that it is his primary duty to maintain his dependent family members by hook or by crook. So he says, if you have this mentality, I have to maintain them somehow or other, that you're inviting aversion to the Lord. Just as the things of this world are temporary manifestations, so is existence in the heavenly planets. So then he says, according to one's qualities and activities, one is placed within a particular varna or ashram. There's any difficulty in the execution of one's prescribed profession, one may take up the profession of a lower varna. One should live in society and accept material enjoyment in such a way that will not cause a disturbance. Okay. Interesting instructions by Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. 53. The association of children, wife, relatives, and friends is just like the brief meeting of travelers. With each change of body, one is separated from all such associates, just as one loses the objects one possesses in a dream when the dream is over. So every time we change our body, we have a new dream. I think that will be coming up in future chapters. That death is just, birth is not what we think it is. Birth is simply our misconception that we are this body and we're accepting a new body. And this is me. That is birth. This is birth. That will come up, I think, in Burijan's, or maybe it's in mine. So the purport here, we should desire to serve Krishna. And the last sentence, like a weary traveler exhausted from his journey, he should go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal peace as the faithful servant of Lord Krishna. Because everything is temporary in this world. That's what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says about this. Relationships one has with wife, children, kinsmen, and friends are temporary, just like experiences of a dream. While dreaming, one comes in contact with various objects and people, but when he wakes up, all of these vanish. As long as one maintains attachment for such perishable objects, one cannot become steady on the transcendental platform of devotional service, and thus cannot relish the actual flavor of eternal happiness. Paragraph 2. Unless a householder worships child Krishna, his attachment for his children will remain strong. As long as the Lord's pastimes and Madhurya Ras do not become the subject of one's meditation, one will continue to think of his wife as the reservoir of all pleasure. Unless one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, accepting Lord Krishna as one's only friend, just like Sri Dhamma, one will not be able to give up the hankering for temporary and superficial material relationships. Until one's propensity for rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna is awakened, one will continue to foolishly demand service from others. One who is actually intelligent should understand there can be no satisfaction for the self on any planet within the material world. So then he says the same thing as the end of this purport, like a weary traveler, we should go back to Godhead. 54. Deeply considering the actual situation, a liberated soul should live at home just like a guest, without any sense of proprietorship or false ego. In this way, he will not be bound or entangled by domestic affairs. Yes, it's better to understand that until we're thrown out from that situation at time of death. We will be thrown out. So he recommends you should take up a serious program of Krishna Kirtan so you can be liberated even in your family life. And that's the essence of the purport. Okay. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati adds that if one remains absorbed in thinking, I belong to this varna, I belong to this ashram, I am a man or I am a woman, and so on, when we remain a grihavrata, a person whose life is centered around his family. Then he quotes those verses, Yukta Vairagya verses. When one cultivates Krishna consciousness favorably without the coverings of karma and gyan, only then will he transcend his designated position within the varnashram system. So how will you know when you can transcend? When you're doing devotional service free of karma and gyan. 55. So here's for the devotee, grihastha. A householder devotee who worships me by execution of his family duties may remain at home, go to a holy place, or, if he has a responsible son, take sannyas. So three alternatives, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. 56. But a householder whose mind is attached to his home and who is thus disturbed by ardent desires to enjoy his money and children, who is lusty after women, who is possessed of a miserly mentality, and who unintelligently thinks everything is mine and I am everything, is certainly bound in illusion. So in the purport talks about a miserly householder thinking of his own, only his own family or community without mercy for outsiders. And verse 57, the words of the Grihastha. Oh, my poor elderly parents, and my wife with a mere infant in her arms, and my other young children, without me they have absolutely no one to protect them and will suffer unbearably. How can my poor relatives possibly live without me? This verse is quoted, and the next verse is quoted, in Madhurya Kadambini, in the section of Vyuta Vikalpa. There's six levels of unsteady devotional service. And the third one is Vyuta Vikalpa. Should I renounce or should I enjoy? That is, it's indecision, the level of indecision. So then he's thinking, shall I just spend my life happily and family life, making my wife and children Krishna conscious and worshipping the Lord? Or should I give them all up and go to Vrindavan to perfect myself by engaging full time in hearing and chanting with no distractions? Or shall I wait till the last stage after enjoying all sorts of pleasure and have finally understood the whole material world is simply a forest fire of affliction? Or is it better I just renounce right now? So his mind is just going back and forth and he can't decide. This is the third level of unsteady devotional service. And then they quote many different quotes, how Maharaj Bharat gave up his family life. But then he thinks, oh, should I give up unreliable family life while still young? On the other hand, it's not proper to renounce immediately. Shouldn't I wait till the death of my old parents before renouncing? And then they quote this verse, 57. Besides, if I give up my family life and I'm not satisfied, my mind will constantly dwell in family life even after renouncing. And then he says, anyway, I can see I don't have the strength for renunciation. So for the time being, I'll just work to keep my body alive. Later, after satisfying my desires, I'll enter Vrindavan and engage in worship of the Lord 24 hours a day. After all, the scriptures point out, 11:20-31, Gyan and Vairagya are not beneficial in the practice of devotional service. So there. So I will remain Grihastha. 20:31. So this is Madhurya Kadambini. The next one is also quoted. Because of his foolish mentality, a householder whose heart is overwhelmed by family attachment is never satisfied. Constantly meditating on his relatives, he dies and enters into the darkness of ignorance. Purport, Adham Vishate Tama indicates that in his next life, an attached householder will certainly be degraded because of his primitive mentality of bodily attachment, which is called Mudhadi. In other words, after enjoying sense gratification of considering oneself the center of everything, one enters into a lower species of life. Somehow or other, we must fix our minds on Lord Krishna and come out of the darkness of ignorance to our real life in Krishna consciousness. So there is the Griha Medhi and the Griha Virhasta. Grihastha is the devotee who can stay at home and also worship Krishna. And the Griha Medhi is the miserly person who is attached and thinks everything is mine. So there's two different verses, it describes two different types of family life. 55 and 56. 55 is the Grihastha and 56 is the Grihamedi. No, this chapter, right here, verse 55 and 56. They're both described. Any questions, comments on these verses? Yes, there's three. It says there's three kinds of bhakti: pure bhakti, mixed bhakti, and secondary bhakti. Guna bhuti. I can't remember the Sanskrit names for them.
Pradhana and Gona.
Gona. Yeah.
At the same time, we Srila Prabhupada wanted Varnashram Dharma in ISKCON, and also the Bhagavatam dedicates very substantial attention to Varnashram Dharma, like here. So. If we study or if we try to establish some kind of Varnashram Dharma, how do we reconcile this with these statements that we don't need Varnashram Dharma in pure devotion? All we need is just bhakti.
How to reconcile that the fact that we don't need Varnashram in pure bhakti, all we need is bhakti, and the fact that Prabhupada wanted Varnashram? Well, because there is a qualification for the pure bhakti, and those who, so okay, pure bhakti for everyone, but those who can't do that, then they have to have something to do. Yeah, so Prabhupada, when he first started, he just gave pure bhakti for everyone. Everyone was accepted like that. So the Varnashram within ISKCON will be different from the Varnashram outside, because within, everyone is a Vaishnava, so that's even higher than a Brahmana. So I could see that actually if everyone is following the regulative principles, then they can be accepted on the highest level no matter what sort of activity they're doing. So the activity is not the qualification. It's not the activity, but it's the mentality. So the Shudra has a mentality. The Vaishya has the mentality. So if a devotee has the mentality, well, money is the center. Or if a devotee has the mentality, well, enjoyment is the center, then he's on the Shudra level, but mixed with bhakti. If someone devotee has the mentality, well, money is the first priority in my life, but he still chants, and he can be a Vaishya. And then one who's of the mentality of a Kshatriya, heroism, I must lead, I must fight. I must fight for justice and truth. I must protect those who are having injustice. So then a Kshatriya devotee, and then there's the Brahmana who is peaceful, satisfied, and accepts what comes, and whose life is based on the scriptures. Of course, all of them try, but the Brahmana is especially supposed to be the leader in the spiritual platform. That he's supposed to lead the rest of, supposed to be an advisor to the rest, be able to advise the rest. So devotees can be Varnashram in that sense, but it has to be by the mentality, as I said, the guna and the karma. Karma is also there. You're doing the work. Somebody may be I've seen there's people who do the sacrifices so they can get money. They go out and perform sacrifice, but the mentality is to get money from the people. So they learn how to do all these, marriage sacrifice, this, that. And the purpose is to get money. In the West, I see in the West, there's devotees come from India and they go to the West and then they get married and then they make their living by going out and doing different rituals for people. But their purpose is to get money. And then they keep the money and they don't give to the temple. So it's like, you see, then you understand, okay, so this is a Vaishya mentality. So that you have to see from the mentality. The mentalities are described there, of what are the different mentalities. So then even someone who may be, okay, but the Brahmana, the Vaishya also has second initiation. But he's acting like a Brahmana, but his mentality is Vaishya. So that then he's a Vaishya. He may be performing the ritualistic rituals for the people, but if his mentality is Vaishya, then it's there. But the problem is that the mentality is the main thing. Activity is also there. But the thing is that we cannot label people. The devotees don't want to be labeled as different things. But we should understand. We should just understand ourselves. Okay, so here's a person who is acting, in this way, but actually he's from a different... Or there may be even a Brahmana who makes money, who's a Vaishya. I know some people in South India, they give 50% of their income to the temple. They follow what Prabhupada said. And they teach also. Their activity is to teach, but they also make money outside. They teach also. And so it's very difficult. We don't want to label people, but we just need to understand what is. Yeah.
You can't do this.
Yeah.
You
right.
Can't do that.
You're a Vaishya, so you can't.
You can't do that because.
Yeah, you're a Vaishya, so you cannot teach.
So
yeah, Asurik Varnashram.
Yeah, misusing
How it is going to be different. One thing I would say is that there would be much more self-sufficient communities.
Farms,
yeah. Much more self-sufficient communities, I think, would be. That's what Prabhupada wanted. I think that the way that we could show the world how to live on the land with the land and just be able to support ourselves from the land. And he did predict a lot of times that people would be forced to, he would get a lot of people to join our farms one day because they won't be able to live in the village, in the cities. The cities will become so hellish.
10, 12 times, they will leave the
cities. Yeah. And they go to the forest because of harassment. I would say that the most important thing is this cow protection and the farm communities. It's in the cities, it's artificial.
Only in the farms?
Well, I think not only, but he would like, that's how Prabhupada would have liked to have expanded,
and
I think.
Outside the farms, how would it look like?
Yeah, how would it look like? Yeah, it's a good question.
What would be different outside the farms?
Well, you're dependent on so many things. Yeah, the Vaishya Prabhupada said that this one very rich gold who deals in gold, he started with a dead rat. He started his business during the plague. He went to get a loan from another Vaishya, and the Vaishya said, "You're a Vaishya. I'm not going to give you money. There's money in the streets." And so then, because that time there was a plague, so if you would take a dead rat, they would give you money for it. So he took a dead rat, got some money, and then he bought something to sell, and then he sold that, then he bought something else to sell, and from that he got a very huge gold business. So the Vaishya, yes, it's true. Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahmana, they can create.
No.
How would a Kshatriya create? I don't know. Better watch out on that one. Abhay would like to say something. Wait, 1 minute. Abhay's next. Yeah, the farms, Varnashram wasn't an agrarian society, that's a fact. They didn't have these cities. That's why when I read this book on Bhakti Vikas Swami, it's like, over here, okay, this one. And he talks about how they used to live in the villages, and their main focus was their relationships with all the other people in the village. And then this one lady, she went to live in a village in, Nepal, or no, in the Himalayas here in India. She lived there for 20 years, and she saw that they were also living very naturally, and they didn't need money even. They would just trade. But when the tourists came, then it ruined their whole culture, because then they had to have what the Western, they had to have money, they had to have tape recorders, they had to have all these things. It just ruined the whole the village culture. But before, everything was based on trust and love and, relationships. And now it's money. Yeah. Even they wanted to make a law against organic farming. Because, yeah, where in America?
In America.
Wow.
Gardens.
What's that?
Against home gardens.
Home gardens.
Small,
shh. See?
Gardens.
It's bad. Shh. Yeah. Yeah, there was one. I just remembered something. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this somebody who is a high-level management person in, I think, IBM. He's my friend in Bombay. And he said his job is to train up these MBAs to be managers. He said, but none of them want to stay in India. They all want to go to the West. So they learn, they get some experience, and then they just want to go to the West. And so it's like, yeah, you can't find anyone. He wants to stay because he's a devotee and wants to be with the temple, near the temple, and stay in India. Anyway, yes. Yeah, actually, in the, where is it? One university in the early days, it was Burijan, and Naratam, and so many, Raghu, Rupanuga, Pralananda Swami, they were all in the same class. Bhakti Yoga class at the university. So many devotees came from that one class. They all became devotees, I think, all of them. Rupanuga. Rupanuga was leading. Burijan, Jagadish, Narottam, and Lakshmimoni, I think, all of them were in this class. Yeah. Yeah, she's not here now. She went to Tirupati. Okay, so we will stop now because it's 2:30. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.